Welcome to Women in the Middle Entrepreneurs, the podcast that gives you an unfiltered behind-the-scenes look at what it's really like being a woman in the middle who's over 50 and following her entrepreneurial dreams. Grab a superhero cape, girlfriend, because you deserve one. I'm your host, Master Certified Life Coach and Midlife Mentor, Susie Rosenstein, and I am excited to inspire you with interviews that feature all of this midlife amazingness. Let's go. Hey there, welcome back to the show. We have another really exciting interview ahead of us today about balancing life and business throughout a 40-year career as a serial entrepreneur. Today, you're going to be meeting Lorianne Green, a woman in the middle entrepreneur who's created a course and coaching program on a subject she's been dealing with personally for 40 years, hair loss among women. Welcome to the show, Lorianne. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Susie. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am really glad we're talking about this because this is something I haven't talked about on either of my podcasts, but I sure have friends that have brought it up, and I've been at some networking type meetings and people have been bringing it up and suggesting products and this and that. So I was delighted to have you on. So today we're going to be having a really good conversation. I know it, about your midlife entrepreneur story. We're going to be talking about your business, what's going really well, what midlife issues might be getting in the way to some extent and might be challenging for you as a business owner and maybe in your life trying to do it all. So let's get started with my favorite question: how old you are, how long you've been an entrepreneur, what your entrepreneurial journey is like, and what you do. Take it away.
Okay. I am 63. Hard to believe. I look in the mirror and it's hard to believe myself, but, I'm 63 and I've been, an entrepreneur, not all the time, but my first entrepreneurial effort was when I was 24.
Wow.
I was in, New York City and I was an orchestral conductor professionally. I went to a New York conservatory and, nobody just hands you an orchestra and says, here, you can practice on this. So I created a nonprofit organization and did fundraising and got money from the city, state, and local businesses. And I started a professional orchestra in northern Manhattan called the Washington Heights Orchestra. For those
at
of you,
at 24, that's
at
unbelievable.
24. It was right after I got out of conservatory, and it allowed me to practice my conducting, do the standard repertoire, which is necessary. So we did everything from Bach to Stravinsky, everything in between. So that was really my first foray. After that, I ended up doing some other things, including working in high tech. And actually wrote a book when I was 35. And that's it behind me. Save your hands. It's for manual therapists to not injure themselves, to get repetitive stress injuries from their work, because that happens very commonly.
Oh.
So, and later on, that became part of my entrepreneurial journey. So I am. Let's fast forward to when I was 39, and I decided I had been in France quite a bit, and I decided that I wanted to go and live in France. So I started a company to do private sightseeing tours of Paris, because my French was pretty fluent. I knew Paris really, really well. I had very good friends there, so I used to go very often. And that quickly turned into a lot of requests to go to Champagne and the Loire Valley for wine tasting. Oh. And I had met already the man who became my husband, who is French. And he had a car and he knew quite a bit about wine. So we started doing wine tours, and they were so popular that we decided to only do wine tours. And we opened a company called French Wine Explorers, which still exists. And my ex-husband, he was buying and selling wine with the very top chateaus. So we had entrance to those chateaus, which was very unusual at that time. You really had to know people there. It's different now. But at that time, it was unheard of to bring a group into a first growth of Bordeaux or a very famous Burgundy producer. So we did that until I think it was 2007. And in 2007, I had somebody approach me who wanted to buy the business. Now, service businesses that are based around one person, because I was the person leading the tours, are notoriously hard to sell. I'm sure you've heard this from other entrepreneurs. So when you have an offer, you take it seriously. And I met with the person and we were a good fit. She offered me a very good price and very good terms, and I couldn't turn it down. So I sold that business, and I thought something I've done a lot in my career is pivot from one sort of business or career to another. I think I'm on my seventh or eighth career at the moment. So I think that's a very important thing, is to be flexible and to be able to pivot. And at the same time, I had an opportunity to do the second edition of my book, just was much enlarged and was for all manual therapists. The first book was for massage therapists. So I became the publisher of the book, and I had about 100 schools that bought the book regularly, and they bought in the hundreds. So I figured, you know, with this expanded version, there would be other types of schools. And it started out really great. I had all kinds of orders. Once I had a lot of pre-orders while I was creating the book and publishing it. And then the financial crisis hit. So, and that made a big difference. Again, the importance of being flexible and being able to pivot came up once again, because the schools were requiring the book as part of the package that they sold of required books that they sold along with the course that they were teaching. And to save money, they all decided that they would only require one book, which was an anatomy and physiology book, you know, the most basic possible thing. And they no longer required my book. So they stopped buying it. And I had to rely on individuals, and that was never my business model. The business model was to have bulk sales to schools.
And yeah, like so academic takes it.
Because it's a textbook. Right. So, you know, it was very difficult. And of course, for everybody, it was a very, very difficult time. I mean, there were businesses closing right and left. And I tried to keep it going, and it didn't. I just couldn't see how it was going to keep going. So I had to pivot once again. We were living part-time in France, and we were being snowbirds in Florida. And we decided to sort of consolidate. Instead of having two residences, we moved back to France, and we lived only in France. At that time, I because I figured we'd stay in France forever, and so I got my French citizenship, so I'm a dual citizen. And I spent about a year trying to figure out what my next step would be, and doing some odd jobs. I led some wine tours for another company and things like that. And then a friend of mine, who I'd known for quite a long time, a French man, he started an international wine education organization. And he had built it to the point where it was the second biggest in the world. He was on five continents, and he was doing extremely well. He had a mailing list of 60,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah. And I said to him, have you thought about including wine tours? And he said, you know, it's funny you ask that, because people have started asking me for that. And so we worked out a way of working together where I would operate the tours. He would do the marketing with his extensive list. and we would do tours. And that took off like a jet plane.
Wow.
He had a lot of pent up demand for that. And it just kept getting better and better. And we added more and more tours. Instead of just France, we did Italy also and Spain. And instead of me leading the tours, he had internationally renowned wine experts, you know, people who write for the big wine magazines or people who are masters of wine, the highest wine designation. So I took more of the backseat and did the business. I hired people and, you know, I had a staff of about four people, and it just was doing extremely well. We hit $1 million in sales pretty fast. I was making in the multiple six figures, and everything was fine. I figured I'd probably keep doing it until I was at least 70, since I feel I have, knock wood, no health problems. And I figured I'd be able to do it. You know, it's a remote job. You're at home, so right. It's not very, it's stressful. It's a tough business, but it's not physically demanding. Right. And again, life intervened, or the universe intervened, and COVID hit. And we were doing tours only in Europe. And we started out pushing the tours toward the fall, thinking, well, maybe this will be over soon. And we quickly realized it wasn't going to be. And then the European Union closed their airspace to Americans, Asians, Brazilians, and a number of other nationals that were our clients, because we had clients from all over the world. So from pretty much that day to the next, I had no business.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've been hit twice by world events that have stopped me in my tracks. I think I'm sure that there are people listening who are thinking, oh, that happened to me too. Because, of course, you know, the financial crisis and COVID happened to everybody.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people lost their businesses.
Yeah.
So that was a huge blow, because that was the most successful business that I had. And I'd gotten used to making an extremely good living.
Yeah.
And again, I had to pivot, but I had to pivot at an older age than before.
Right.
So I was, gosh, I guess I was 59 or 60. And it as you get older, it seems, especially since I had already gone through one big world crisis, it seems more difficult. You know, the second time you have to go through it, it's like, I've been here before. It was tough the last time. This is even tougher. So definitely my age played a role in how I felt about it, because I was looking forward to doing that till I retired.
Yeah. And so there was disappointment. And was there also like your, is it a combination of energy as well, or is it mostly mindset?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think not like innate energy, because I feel very energetic. But like emotional energy.
Right.
You know, it's like, I've been through this already and it was tough the last time. Now I have to go through it again. I thought I was done with this.
Yeah.
You know, I was really comfortable. Everything was going great. It was a huge disappointment. It took me, it was a big blow.
Can imagine.
I it took me a while to get over it. A lot of days of crying and what the hell do I do next? And,
exactly. Yeah.
That was a big deal. And unfortunately, speaking of things that happen in midlife, my mother, who was 94, I guess she was a little younger, 92, 93, she had a major stroke. So I needed to, she was here in Philadelphia. So after my father died, we brought her up from Florida and brought her to Philadelphia. So we had to put her in assisted living, and it was during COVID, and it was extremely difficult. There were times I could see her. There were times I couldn't. I had to take care of and coordinate her care. And then we realized that she was dying. And so, you know, we had to arrange hospice, and I have an older brother. He came down, and, you know, we were with her. She died. She lingered for a while, but she died. She was 95. So she lived a good long life. But losing a mother, especially for a woman, is always very difficult and very complicated.
Definitely. Yeah.
So I really didn't have the time for quite a while. I was looking for a job, because I sort of couldn't imagine yet again starting a business. Right. I figured, well, take it easy on myself. I'll get a regular job.
A job for a serial entrepreneur. What could go wrong here?
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, after my mother died, I took some time to grieve her death as well. So I needed a little break. And the job search did not go well. First of all, my age. And I discovered that there is a lot of ageism out there. And second of all, I learned that people don't like to hire entrepreneurs for JOBs.
Right.
So, you know, they look at somebody who, you know, the past 20 years, I've done nothing but be an entrepreneur. And they figure this woman is not going to be able to take direction. She's not going to like it when people tell her what to do. I was applying for sort of middle management jobs because I don't have the business school background even though I was the head of three companies. You know, being the head of a company when you're an entrepreneur does not equal being a CEO of a corporation. So I was not able to find a job.
Wow.
And I put in 150 applications. I only got a couple of interviews. It's also that because I had to pivot so many times, my work background looked a little chaotic to people. They didn't quite know what to do with it. My feeling was that I had a lot of different kinds of expertise. But that's not the way HR people look at it. They look at, you know, why were you only, you know, 2.5 years at Microsoft and not longer? You know, why did you only do this company for, you know, 5 years? And they're not so interested in hearing about the financial crisis and all of that. So it was. Getting a job, I finally came to the conclusion that, you know, doing the same thing over and over and getting the same result and then trying to do it again is the, what do they say? It's the definition of insanity.
Yes.
So I decided, that's going to be a dead end. So then I started thinking about starting a new business. And I figured, you know, the thing these days is online businesses. So I looked into all of the different kinds of online businesses. I took free webinars constantly, and I settled on a program called Activate, which is headed by a woman named Rachel Ngom. I'm giving her a little plug here. Because she's really excellent. And it was how to start an online course and coaching business. And we talk about niching down. And when I really niched down, because there were so many things that I could have done, it occurred to me that really what I knew the best was hair loss, because I lost half my hair when I was 20. And I have an autoimmune disease that's fairly rare, that attacks only the scalp. And it's a scarring disease. So it kills the hair follicles. And I've been on medication and dealing with that for over 40 years. And, you know, I've been through every possible treatment, and I was lucky to find doctors to treat me who were the among the top experts in this field, and were very familiar with treating women, which is not that easy to find.
Right.
And so I learned a lot from them, and I learned a lot from my own experience. And then I did a lot of research, because having written a medically oriented textbook, I knew how to do medical research, and I came up with a course. And I'm very empathetic, and I know personally what it's like to go through this. It's really, and it sounds like a big word, but it can be devastating for women to lose their hair. There are such strong messages we receive from society for forever, you know, for centuries, millennia, that your hair is your crowning glory. It's what defines your femininity. It makes you desirable, etc. So, you know, people feel absolutely horrible when it starts happening to them. And plus, there's a fear factor, because all of a sudden your hair starts falling out and you have no idea why.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because in midlife, I mean, a lot of midlife women are focused on hair removal. I mean, talking about chin hairs and whiskers and just weird things going on in that department. But to have hair loss, yeah, but this is very different. And I find it so interesting, though, that you're in a business coaching program thinking about what would work well as online business. I mean, I thought the thing you knew best was wine tours. That's what I thought you were going to say if I didn't know, you know, from your application what you were doing. But I think it's brilliant that you almost looked at, you know, something that was very, very painful for you in your life.
Very personal. Yes.
Very personal, very painful, as a way to give back, because you had become an expert.
Yeah. You know, I had thought about wine tours, but there are really very few people who have the right kind of, the right combination of experience to be able to do wine tours. And you have to have the contacts at the wineries. So I went, when I was in France, my ex-husband and I went to school to become sommeliers. So we have a French state diploma as sommeliers. It was a very long and tough training. So, you know, finding people here who have the sommelier training, but they want to be going to Europe, I didn't think there would be much of an audience for that, but I did think about it.
Well, it's interesting, though, because from a niche perspective, you know, you want to make sure that you're talking to people who know, who identify, they have a clear identity with the problem. And for sure, I think if you were struggling with hair loss, you would absolutely identify with that. So it sounds like it's such a strong niche.
Once I settled on it, it made perfect sense to me. And it's also, you know, there's a big prospective client pool, because shockingly enough, I didn't know this until I started doing research. 50% of women will lose their hair at some point in their lives. And they can be as young as 3 or 4 years old, all the way through their lives. So it goes up to 65% past 60. Aging does have something to do with it, but there are so many things that can cause hair loss. Even like in my case, I went through the death of my mother, and it was traumatic for me. That could have caused hair loss. Having COVID has been shown to cause hair loss, especially if you had a very high fever with it. And usually people who have COVID have a pretty high fever. So there are many, many reasons that women lose their hair. And that's why it's such a big percent. Since women are half the population of the United States, and half of those are experiencing at some point hair loss, that's a big client pool. So I don't worry about, you know, where am I going to find these women? I mean, I walk down the street and I see them. So,
right.
You know, you might not notice, but I notice because I know what to look for.
Yeah, so, absolutely. So in terms of what you can do about it, can you just give us a little bit of info about what you teach?
You know, one of the main points that I make is that it's extremely important to go to a qualified dermatologist, that is a dermatologist who is specialized in hair loss, because dermatologists, a regular old dermatologist doesn't necessarily know much about hair loss. But there are a fair number who make it a specialty. Those are the ones that I've gone to, especially among women, because women's hair loss and men's hair loss can be quite different and they're treated differently. There's different medications. Getting a diagnosis is really the first step. First of all, it's reassuring because there isn't that fear factor of, oh my God, am I sick? You know, is something happening to me that I should really be afraid of? You know, maybe it's just that you went through a traumatic event, an accident, an illness, a surgery, and your hair fell out as a result. And in 3 to 12 months, it might all grow back. That kind of hair loss called telogen effluvium almost always grows back. So sometimes a diagnosis can be very reassuring. Mm. If it's something more serious, at least you can get treatment for it and it might get better or it might keep it from getting worse. Usually hair loss is progressive if it's not from a trauma or something temporary like that. So you want to go to a doctor as fast as possible. But I actually start the course with a lot of talk about mindset and about letting go of old beliefs. Because as women, whether we realize it or not, most of us buy into those old ideas. You know, if you don't have long, flowing, beautiful hair, you know, you're ugly and nobody's going to look at you and people are going to, the only way they'll look at you is they'll stare at you as you walk down the street because you're different and people are usually, you know, very afraid of being stared at.
For sure. You know,
for not a good reason, you know.
Definitely. But I'm also struck by the name, like your website, hairlossheroines.com. Mm-hmm. Even using the word heroine, because a heroine, the way heroines are depicted is usually, you know, very strong, mm-hmm. very beautiful, and flowy hair.
Well, and,
you know, I love that you're putting that on its ear because of the strength, you know, in spite of whatever hair situation is going on.
What I'm trying to get across with the heroines idea, first of all, I wanted something positive.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't want it to be hair loss sufferers.
Yeah.
I want to give people hope.
Yes.
So I feel like just to take the course and be willing to take a look at it, both from an emotional point of view and for all of the information already makes you a heroine because it takes courage. To me, a heroine, the hallmark of a heroine is courage. So, you know, you're willing to take this on, you're willing to learn things. And the more that you learn and the more that, you know, part of it is also talking with other women who have hair loss. We have a private Facebook group. And we have group coaching sessions. I lead the group coaching sessions, but the women are able to ask questions and talk to each other as well. That's very reassuring. You're not the only woman. You know, look at these women. You know, I met recently with a bunch of women who have what's called alopecia totalis or universalis, which means they have no hair on their body whatsoever. So they are bald. And I thought they were beautiful and they had a lot of courage. They go out in public with bald heads and they support each other. And that was very inspiring to me. So, you know, you in my course, you'll see women with all levels of hair loss, people who it's not very obvious, and others where it's, you know, extremely obvious, or they're bald. Being bald is unusual for women. Usually it doesn't get to that point unless you have that specific disease, which is uncommon.
What's it like for you personally to, you know, you've been struggling with this by yourself, seeing the odd doctor here and there, and now you're really creating a community where you can give back, but it's also so normalizing for you, I would imagine. What's it like for you to be with and to be mentoring all these women?
Oh, it's very helpful for me. It has normalized it more for me because I look at myself as that I should try to be a role model. So if I'm a role model for something called hair loss heroines, then, you know, I shouldn't be the one who's crying buckets during the sessions and, you know, sharing my personal angst about it. Although, you know, I do share my personal feelings about it, and everybody understands because they've all been through it. I mean, when it first happened to me, I did cry buckets, and I didn't want to go out of the house for a couple of weeks, but I was young. I was 20. So I was, you know, it was a big catastrophe at 20.
Oh, yeah.
But recently, actually, it got worse again. And I got to the point with me, it's hard to tell looking at me like this, but I'm very good at hiding it. But I don't know, maybe if I went like this, I mean, I have really very little hair here. You can look right through it.
Oh, I see. So now Lorianne is moving her head around and tipping in different directions so I can see on Zoom. I actually wouldn't have noticed it until you did that, because I'm sure you are expert at styling.
After 40 years. Yes. Yeah. And we do talk about that in the course. We talk about the different ways that you can, what is the best way to style your hair or get your hair cut so that it covers the best? What are the different kinds of camouflage that are available? And of course, there are wigs and wig toppers. So, and it's really up to each person. So mine had gotten worse recently. And because at first I felt terrible about it once again, because it got a lot more noticeable than it had before. Then starting, this program made me feel a lot better about it. Made me feel, cause I bought a wig topper and I started wearing, it's just something that's 5 inches long just to cover the top, which is where I have the hair loss mostly. You know, I was getting back into that mindset of, oh, I want to cover it. I'm afraid to go out. Everybody's going to notice. I mean, it's very easy for those things to come back.
Yeah.
But by doing this program, I've stopped wearing the wig topper, and I've decided that, in fact, I had, when I had my branding photos done for my website, I thought, well, should I wear the wig topper so I can look really nice, or should I go natural? And I thought, no, I have to show people my hair loss. And there are pictures that show very clearly my hair loss. There's one where the wind is blowing and you can see my scalp, because my hair is all blown back. Mm. So I thought, no, I have to be real about this.
Yeah.
And so people can relate to me, and I can show that I can have photos done, professional photos done, and with a big smile on my face with hair loss.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much, Lorianne. With all of your different businesses over the years, what would you say is the skill set that is really helping you now with a completely different business?
There are definitely commonalities with any business that you start. You have to be disciplined. You have to be driven. You have to be organized. You have to have a method or a strategy. You have to look to, okay, here's what I'm doing now. What am I doing next week? What am I doing next month? What's going to happen in a year? planning things out. You have to be good at planning, so that you always know every day what you're going to get accomplished. You need to think about scaling the business, which is what I ended up doing with the last business. The last two businesses before this one, I had to hire people because it became just too much for me. And my time is, the most valuable of anybody who works for my company. And I shouldn't be doing the little administrative stuff. It's not efficient and it's better to pay somebody to do that than to take my time. So you have to be able to go with the ups and downs and not get too easily discouraged.
Right. I can totally see how all of that experience has really built your resilience muscle.
Yes, that's the good word. Resilience. Yeah. You have to be very resilient because while you're working and putting together the business and while you're running the business, there are always ups and downs. There's always, for sure. Some sort of thing that becomes a big deal that really shouldn't have, but for some reason, in the tour business, that was terrible. Somebody who got up in arms about something silly and called me at 3 a.m.
My gosh. But one of the things you put in your application I really wanted to talk to you about was one of the main differences for you isn't the business, it's that you're single now, starting a business.
Yes.
At six, in your 60s. So now you note in your application that going it alone is more difficult and more risky financially, even though you're set up well in your life.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what that was like doing it without the emotional support of a partner.
Yes, that has been difficult. Definitely. My ex-husband and I worked together on the business, and we were very complimentary. So he did what his skill set was good for, and I did what my skill set was good for, and it worked out very well. Of course, we gave each other emotional support as a couple, and we got divorced 7 years ago. So at least it didn't happen, as I was starting the business. That would have been tough. But I realized that I feel when I'm stuck on a problem or when I'm having doubts, because we always have doubts. They come up and haunt us every once in a while, that I have no one to turn to with that. Of course, I have friends and I have one brother and we're very close, but I don't have somebody that I'm with 24/7.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of support. So that has been difficult. I've had to really make an adjustment in my mindset, and it brought up a kind of fear that I wasn't expecting. The fact of not having two salaries.
Yeah.
Because even though we worked together, since my ex-husband had been a civil servant in France, he had a pension, quite a nice pension. So we could live on his pension. So I didn't feel that burden of if this doesn't work, then, what do I do? Yes, I made a good living for a good amount of time. And yes, I have, investments and savings. But at 63, you don't really want to be drawing down your investments and savings. It's not like being 53 where you've got time to make it up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about. Like, I really appreciate what you're saying. And thank you for being so honest about it. But there is this whole retirement age mindset that a lot of times there's things in our head that we didn't really create, but we've got these ideas of when we've been told or watched on TV or read in a magazine, or maybe our parents said it, who knows what. And even a lot of our friends now are retiring. I'm in the same boat. I turned 60 and my teacher friends have all retired. And I'm watching it on Facebook, right? Yeah. It's like, there's one retiring. There's one retiring. And it's not that they're not doing other things, but they're retired. And so here you are gearing up when the people around you are gearing down.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And the added wrinkle that you're talking about is the financial piece of it, being alone and making these decisions. So I totally appreciate that. But do you find in your circle that you are, you know, in the minority of people ramping up?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's, I don't know, maybe this is not true, but it seems to me that there are probably fewer people at 63 who are starting a business than at 53 or 43, because people are thinking about slowing down and, you know, looking forward to retirement. And I was that way too.
But it's a funny thing with entrepreneurs, because we're always thinking. There's always ideas. There's always excitement about trying new things and whatever. So I've had some interesting conversations on this podcast with people who aren't really sure when they want to retire. And they're in their late 60s, early 70s. And because it's so arbitrary, it's so personal. You can do whatever you want. You can morph your business. You can work less. You can hire more. You can do so. There's so many options. It's not just meet this little formula and decide, you know, this is going to be the day and this is going to be my pension. It's so subjective, and it doesn't have to be at any particular age.
That's true. And in fact, I've read a lot of articles talking about whether the concept of retirement is an old-fashioned idea at this point.
There was a mayor in a nearby city here. She passed recently, but, you know, not too long ago, she was a mayor in her 90s, and she was well-loved, and she was a long-standing mayor, and people kept reelecting her because she ran a tight ship. She was, I forget some of those expressions that they used about her, but she was strong, man. It was really a delight to watch. But knowing that you can make these decisions as you go, and you need to really decide, well, what will that look like for me? And it could be something, in a way, we're pioneers, you know, because to be working like this, I have no idea when I want to retire. I haven't really thought about it. And my husband's kind of also not thinking about it. And he comes from, his parents didn't retire until they were in their, I think, mid 70s. So it's just interesting. And I think the wrinkle for you is that you're alone, and you're and you weren't before with those other jobs. So you're definitely sensing some differences.
Yes, it brings up a fear that I never had before. And it's just, my parents went through the depression. They were extremely poor. And, you know, it's a little bit of depression mentality that I inherited from my parents.
Sure.
But I agree with you. And certainly with this type of business, this is the type of business that I could, you know, hire enough people that I do the parts of it that I want to do. And, and I don't do the parts of it that I don't want to do eventually. I was already thinking that I would do, you know, those wine tours. I would do the until I was 70.
Right.
Because I wanted to, again, it was a financial consideration, but also I figured I'd be in good shape until I was 70, knock wood. It was also because then you get, you know, better Social Security money. But I tend to worry about, you know, people live long. My parents lived to be very old. So I, you know, am concerned about having enough money to, you know, when I'm that age that, you know, I'm comfortable, and I don't have to change my lifestyle too much. So, but this certainly, this kind of business, lends itself to going as long as I feel like going.
Yeah. So, it becomes almost a creative pursuit when it's just, how can I figure this business out and continue to pivot and grow it in a way that supports my lifestyle as my lifestyle changes, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, so exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't say I have a definite date in mind at this point.
No, it's very different for entrepreneurs. So how can people best get in touch with you? What is that website?
It's hairlossheroines.com. Very easy.
Amazing. Lorianne, thank you so much for taking the time from your day and sharing all of this. I really appreciate how you described so candidly your pivots, your experience, how you made decisions along the way, and authentically what's really going on for you now as you dive into, you know, really helping women on something that's not openly discussed and is very painful. And you're leading the way as an amazing mentor. So I love what you're doing. You're amazing. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for your kind words. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, amazing. Okay, so that is it for now. If you're listening and loving what you hear, please like and subscribe. Reviews are great too and much appreciated. And if you're a woman in the middle who's 50 or over and an entrepreneur and would like to also come on the show, please go to www.midlifeinterviews.com and fill out an application. We would love to have you on to share your story. Thanks so much for listening. It's never too late for you to put yourself on your agenda. I'm Susie Rosenstein, and I'll talk to you again soon. Now, real quick before we say goodbye, if you are connecting with the show, I'd love to invite you to a happiness breakthrough coaching session. It's my laser-focused coaching call that will help you get clear about what's getting in your way as a woman in the middle entrepreneur and confident about your next steps to more happiness in your next chapter. Head over to www.nextchapterbreakthrough.com. Talk to you soon.